Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. How you doing? Genuinely Grace here. And I hope you had a chance to listen to Jason Vale's podcast. You might have seen my posts on social media. I've known Jason for so many years. And as you probably know, he was a guest on this podcast on Alcohol Free Life. But this week I'm his guest. So it was really nice to be on the other side of the mic and chat with Jason. And we do cover all kinds of topics, as you can imagine, from kind of natural health and well-being, and obviously touching on how I first came across Jason's work with the juicing, and I went on various juicing retreats, which, you know, really did transform my health and well-being, actually. It really did. And then obviously we talk about sobriety, and Jason, as most of you know, wrote Kick the Drink Easily so many years ago. But being alcohol free is not his main thing. It's not the thing he talks about the whole time. But clearly it is the thing I talk about all the time. So we had a really good chat about just the benefits, really, of choosing to live holistically, choosing to focus on the whole rather than the pill for every ill kind of mentality. And it was a really fun podcast. So I hope you get a chance to listen to that. Just wherever you get your podcast, just type Jason Vale podcast and that will come up. What else have I got to tell you about? Oh, thank you so much for those of you who've let me know that you voted for me in the British Podcast Awards. I think there's still time. So, of course, I'm going to carry on begging you. It's just a listener's choice, and it would just be amazing to have a presence there. So if you're willing to do that for me, there's a link in the show notes, or you can just go to britishpodcastawards.com, click on listener choice. It's the listener's choice, and type the name of the podcast there, Alcohol Free Life, Genuinely Grace. And then you do have to wait until they send you an email, and you have to click it and verify who you are. So it only takes a couple of minutes, but it would just be massively appreciated. So thank you in advance for that. I feel like I'm kind of asking for votes the whole time at the moment, because also my Platinum Awards are running. Most of you know I wear my holistic living hat as well as doing the sobriety stuff, and often promote and talk about natural skincare and beauty and cleaning without chemicals and everything, really. I find it so difficult to focus on just one thing, because I do think the holistic picture is so important. And the Platinum Awards have been running for, goodness, 5-6 years now, and we have some great celeb judges: Joe Wood, Cary Grant, Glynis Barber, Dr. Marilyn Glenville are all on board. And we have so many different categories. It's amazing. So we're also asking for your votes for your favourite natural product. It doesn't matter if they haven't entered. Hopefully lots of your favourite brands have. But really, it's just a case of nominating your faves. And everyone who gives us a nomination will be entered into a draw to win a whole bunch of massive, great big bunch of organic goodies. So have a look at imperfectlynatural.com. I'll put the link in the show notes again. Of course, we have a category for alcohol-free drinks. Like, why would we not? And one of the brands who are part of the awards this year are Sea Arch. You've heard me talk about Sea Arch a lot. They just are such a fantastic artisan brand. And they were one of the first, I think, alcohol-free spirit alternatives that I ever tried, and wow, you know, what an opener they really are. It really is an amazing drink. So anyways, I thought it'd be nice to have a little chat with Sarah from Sea Arch, to catch up with Sea Arch and see what's going on with them, what's new with that lovely brand. Also in the show, going to be chatting to Paul Churchill. If you're listening in the States, I'm guessing you will have heard of Paul. He's the founder of Recovery Elevator. It's a community that helps, you know, people with alcoholism and helps people with sobriety. And Paul's got a really interesting story, because he suffered from alcoholism, as he calls it, for most of his young adult and adult life. And you know, really, really did hit rock bottom, had a failed suicide attempt and lost his job and all kinds of stuff. So it was one of those amazing transformations that Paul had. Now runs the Recovery Elevator. He's given a TED Talk. I've been duped by alcohol. He's written a book. And I thought it'd be a really interesting guy to chat to on the podcast. I've reminded you about the voting for me, so please do that. I would really appreciate it. Oh, our Sober by the Sea events, of course. Still a few spaces. They're really tiny. They're in Southend in Essex. It's going to be a really lovely day of self-care. It doesn't matter whether you're, you know, sober or been sober for years. It's really about focusing on visioning the new you. Sounds very grand, but we are actually going to do a vision board, and we're going to do a few really cool things that help you hopefully leave feeling completely empowered. So check out the Sober by the Sea one day or afternoon and early evening kind of events. We've got there's one on August the 21st that has some spaces, and you could register your interest for any of the others that you know, the spaces might juggle about. So if you go to thesoberclub.com and you'll see that banner there for Sober by the Sea. And it would be absolutely amazing to meet some more people who listen to the pod. It'd be brilliant. Let's hear this little chat with Sarah. I'm really thrilled that my guest is Sarah Yates from Sea Arch. How are you doing, Sarah?
Hiya, yeah, really good. Enjoying the sunshine down here in Devon at the moment.
Lucky you in sunny Devon. I shall show my bottle straight away. I've got one of the little ones, look. So cute. Look at my gorgeous glass. Anyone who's not watching this is thinking, I have no idea what she's talking about, but I am holding up a beautiful glass, which is just the most perfect drink. So thank you. Tell us a little bit about how it all came about. Oh, you've got an even nicer glass. That's a proper gin balloon kind of glass, isn't it?
Lovely.
Yeah, for anyone who's not aware of Sea Arch, I've spoken about you guys a lot because it really is a brand that I absolutely love. But there'll be obviously people new to you. So tell us a bit about how it all came about, because your background and even the Devon coastline is really key to this brand.
Yeah, I mean, I'm Devon born and bred, you know, I brought up here, and we ended up having a wine bar in Torquay. And we began to notice that more and more people were wanting to drink something, wanted to enjoy the social experience of the evening or the lunch. But not necessarily drink alcohol. So we decided to have a go at making one ourselves. Also, because we're from Devon, we wanted to have the coastline as part of our product. So we do use samphire and sea kelp.
Yeah. So just tell us a bit then, for anyone who's new to this, just explain this process. Some brands, you know, who make these kind of drinks, actually it starts with the alcohol and then the alcohol is removed, and some don't have any alcohol. So how does it work for you? And just explain the sort of, you know, the ABV aspect.
Yeah, I mean, the botanicals are individually, the flavours are extracted individually from each botanical. Some of the botanicals are steeped in alcohol and then the alcohol is removed through a process. Some of them have no alcohol involved at all, like a steam distillation process where the distillation goes through and it's steamed, so it's heated to a great heat, goes through the botanic and that gets the flavour, extracts the flavour really well. And there's some new vacuum style which puts it around at enormous speeds and that extracts the flavour. So there's lots of different processes now, and that's getting better, like I said, getting better and better now, extracting the flavours. Mm. And we have, our product is actually less than 0.5, something like 0.4. Mm. Alcohol is a really good way to hold and extract flavour. So there is alcohol involved in our one here. Although we have now developed a zero, so less than 0.02 to 0.03.
So it's just important to stress, you know, in case anyone's listening to this kind of thing for the first time, that anything, you know, under 0.5 is considered you know, no alcohol effectively in the UK, because, you know, what we always say is, you know, if you were to have an orange juice or you were to have a banana, it's about the same amount. It's a trace amount. It's not going to affect your sobriety. I think that's the important thing. When people are brand new to all of this, they sometimes think, oh my goodness, I've seen 0.5 on the bottle. That means I can't have it.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And there is still a lot of confusion and around this 0.5 and less than and non-alcoholic and alcohol free. You know, there's still a lot of blurred lines and sort of muddy waters about it, really. But I think they are trying to clarify it in Parliament. They are trying to get something through to actually make sure that we can all call it zero.
Yeah, like that would be good.
There's a lot more than that. In all sorts of other things, you
yeah,
know, bread.
Exactly,
and,
you know, exactly. Yeah. So just to be clear then, your brand, you know, it really is an artisan brand, and the ingredients in it are actually just beautiful. This is not just, you know, a spirit, in inverted commas, that's had the alcohol removed, which, you know, this is way more than that. And I think that's what makes your product so unique, this really lovely blend of ingredients that are actually good for you. And so you can have it on its own, just served over ice, but of course you can also mix it. So tell us about some of your favorite sort of concoctions. You gave me a couple of lovely recipes to include in the book. Tell us a couple of your favorites.
I mean, with what we put together, I mean, it's obviously up to people's individual choice, but we like serving it with things like citrus and fruit, you know, very light fruit juices and fruits and herbs. We like to keep it clean because it's such a clean drink, you know, with no calories, there's no allergens, no sweeteners in it. It's very, very clean. So we like to try and make our concoctions, as you put them, or cocktails, quite clean as well, to keep that sort of idea going through. I mean, we use one where we called Bees and Seas, where there's a little bit of honey in it. There's cider vinegar and there's apple juice in it and maybe a bit of soda as well. So that keeps it clean. It's, you know, it's the vinegar properties are quite good in it as well. And a few little things from your, so it's a nice clean drink, but it's a lovely unctuous drink as well. But, you know, to be honest, I like to drink it as a double measure, over ice, little squeeze of lemon and a nice tonic. And that's how I like to drink it the most, because I can taste those real layers of flavour.
Yeah, definitely. That's how I've got mine now. Just got a little bit of tonic with it, and I've dropped a couple of frozen berries in just because it looks pretty. you probably can't see on the video here, but it's really nice. And a little slice of lemon. It's lovely. Tell us a little bit about your the cans that you now have, because these are a new addition. This is just perfect. I mean, I've just found that just so amazing for traveling, because, you know, it's all very well having your kind of sober toolkit around you at home, but then if you're on the, you know, going off on a train or whatever, it's not always so easy to get hold of really nice grown-up alcohol-free drinks. So this is just a wonderful addition.
Yeah, they've been amazing. I'm so glad we developed them and went into them, because they're going so well. You know, they're great, obviously, in lockdown, people going out and about, you know, you can pop one in your bag, you can have them for picnics. They're great. They're going to some very prestigious hotels in the Middle East, and, you know, they'll go into their mini bars.
Yeah. So these are pre-mixed, so you don't have to, you know, get a tonic or anything. They're already ready to drink.
We call it a C&T. This is the Rose C&T. So this is a double measure of our core spirit, our coastal juniper spirit. And then into that, in this one, there's a low calorie, very light raspberry and rose infused tonic. Our pink, slightly pink, I don't know if you can see there, but lovely. It's a very slightly pink colour. I've got a few raspberries in mine, as well as my pink lipstick on there. And they are also, the cans are also easy to recycle as well, which is also quite important to our branding, really.
Yeah, sure. Talking about sort of sustainability and stuff, you're doing some work with the Seahorse Trust. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we've done it. We've got together with them in a sort of informal partnership, in that we're trying to raise awareness and...
Just tell us a bit about what they do, because there might be people who don't know about them.
Yeah, I mean, they've got the seahorse is their sort of lead species, but they are all about conservation in the ocean and habitats, seahorses and other coastal animals. And the founder, Neil Garrick Maidment, he's very proactive. He's based here in Devon in Topsham, but he does work throughout the world. They do surveys to find out how these animals live and what they do and their habitats. And then they try and promote, obviously, more sustainability, looking after the oceans. I think he's just done some sort of pushed for a judicial review into drilling into the oceans with the petroleum companies to try and stop that, because you know they are a species that's looking like it's going they're going to be extinct. I mean, you know, I was looking at it today, and about 150 million are killed every year.
Wow.
For Chinese medicine, you know, about a million for the curio trade, you know, and you see.
Wow, really? Sold, I had no idea.
And the pet trade, about a million. So if they don't stop it, they will go extinct. You know, so they are working hard. And like I said, it's you know, the ocean looking after the habitats that helps all the other species. And they're an important part of that ecosystem as well, aren't they? It's not just one species alone. It's what, you know, everything that works around that.
Brilliant. Just tell us where we can find the product then, Sarah. I don't know whether, you know, obviously everything's different at the moment, but at some point, will we find you in more bars and cafes as well as online?
Retail wise, we're with Ocado. Our cans are on Ocado as well as our bottles. We're also on Amazon Prime. We have our own website shop at www.searchdrinks.com. So yes, we are quite becoming more and more widespread out there in various farm shops, bars and restaurants. We are growing nicely.
Fantastic. Yes. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I'm just going to have a little drink of mine. Cheers.
Cheers to you.
That is so lovely. So lovely. Yeah. Very elegant. And, you know, it's lunchtime and who cares, right? Guilt-free. Yeah. Guilt-free. Absolutely. Thank you, Sarah. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, Sarah. And I really appreciate the fact that Sea Arch did some amazing recipes, by the way, in my book. If you get a copy of Happy, Healthy, Sober, there's obviously a big section on what to drink when you're not drinking. And Sea Arch, Sarah did some lovely recipes for us. So really interesting ways of creating your own alcohol-free cocktails and just lovely, lovely summery drinks. So make sure you have a look at that if you haven't already. As promised, let's have listen to this interview with Paul Churchill. I'm really pleased that my guest is Paul Churchill, who, well, there's a lot to chat about. He used to live in Spain and had a bar, I understand. And but that was many years ago. And Paul launched the Recovery Elevator podcast in February 2015. It's over 5 years since Paul had his last drink, it says here. The podcast is doing fantastically well on iTunes. Paul is also the author of the best-selling book, Alcohol is Shit, and has delivered 2 TEDx talks. Wow, it's so great to chat to you, Paul. How are you?
Hey, Janie, I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm really good. We were just before we pressed record, we were just talking about TEDx talks, and you've got one up on me because you've done 2. And you were telling me you did them back to back, right?
Yeah. I said yes to both engagements. And then I got the dates and I said, wait a second, these are 7 days apart. As you know, one of them is a lot of work, but you know, just practicing public speaking, and it was a good exercise, and I'm glad I did both of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, we've got loads to talk about, but let's just take it right back then to when you owned a bar. I'm guessing your life was very different then. Tell us a little bit about what was going on for you and how the change came about.
For sure. Okay. So I've always been an entrepreneur, and I've done things a little different. And in elementary school, I was the kid that showed up with soda pops and candy in my backpack and set up shop at lunchtime. And you know, I had a job in the banking industry. And right before I graduated college, I just said, nah, that's not exciting me anymore. I studied abroad in Spain. I loved it. And I loved to party. I loved alcohol. I was a normal drinker for about 7 years. And then I went back to Spain and I started a pub crawl, which could be a whole different story in itself. As me and my 3 friends, we had 70 people on average 4 nights a week in Granada, Spain. And then that's where I met my future business partner. When I graduated college, I moved out there, bought a bar in Granada, Spain from ages 24 to 27. And it was the best time of my life, as you can imagine, being a young bar owner in a different country, partying every night to people you meet. but it was also the worst. It was also the hardest time in my life, because that is when the addiction to alcohol really took hold. And looking back, I had a drinking problem before moving out to Spain. But if you can just put that on paper and say, okay, drinking problem, moving to Spain, buying a bar, I wonder what's going to happen, Janie. And a dumpster fire.
can't guess.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And eventually ended up walking away from that. It was incredibly humbling overall. And, but I think it was a smart decision. There was a time at the end where, well, this was my morning routine for about the last year after blacking out every night a week. I mean, that's like 15 to 30 drinks there. I'd wake up at 6 a.m. and I would drink a box of wine and 2 beers that were microwaved in all about a 10 minute experience. And the anxiety got so bad that I was just blacking out to appease the anxiety. And one time I blacked out for like 3 or 4 days because I took a bunch of Ambien, woke up from that and said, "Ooh, my goodness, like I'm probably not even going to survive this." So I walked away. And I thought the drinking was going to stay on that side of the Atlantic, and it did a little bit, right? This is called the geographical cure, which helps. It doesn't cure things, but it does help, right? If you're in an environment where drinking is the norm and it's not conducive to wholeness, to happiness without copious amounts of an external substance, then something needs to change. So I did make a smart decision, moved back to Colorado, and then in 2010, went to grad school in Seattle, Washington. And on January 1st, 2010, I quit drinking. I lasted 2.5 years. I wasn't doing anything as far as working a program, no community or anything like that. But I lasted 2.5 years on willpower. And it was great, most of it. But the tail 6 months of that, when it's called a dry drunk in the space of recovery, it got a little painful. And I was looking at it through the lens of a sacrifice. It's like, you know, I'm doing everything that everyone else is. I'm just not drinking. And eventually, you know, willpower is a finite muscle that I drink. And there was 2 years of, oh, shit. this is intense. In summer of 2014, Janie got especially intense. I had a DUI while driving to work that year, failed suicide attempt. It was just like, oh, thank you. Here's my rock bottom. And then 5 days later was another rock bottom, whether emotional, physical, all that stuff. And then finally on September 7, 2014, I quit drinking.
Wow. So, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? And I think it's really fascinating. You know, you say that you can't do this on willpower. You know, as you say, it's not a muscle that's very strong. And it's something that I talk about all the time, is the importance of you know, pitching this as a positive, of seeing the positive in this, because ultimately, as we know now, you're not giving anything up, right? You know, you're only gaining. But while your mindset, that's why I think these, you know, when you just do a month, or oh, you do a dry January or dry July, if the whole time you're white knuckling it through thinking, oh my God, when can I get back to drinking again? It's never going to work, is it?
It won't work in the long run. You are correct, right? And what it is, it's where you place your energy is what you get back. And if you're focusing on, oh, I can't do this, I just can't wait till this 30-day challenge is up, you know, that's okay. You're proving to yourself that you can go 30 days, even though it could be extremely painful. And a lot of us, we do these challenges to internally convince ourselves, hey, I just went 30 days, world, check it out. There's no way I've got a drinking problem. We're really just covering something up that needs more dressing. And we just, you know, put a Band-Aid on it for 30 days.
Yeah. And what did you uncover then when you did quit? You know, what did the work, doing the work involve for you? Was there a lot of stuff you had to really look at and bring out into the open, as it were?
Yeah, Janie, that's a great question. And I've changed my tune on this on the podcast. Before, I used to think that alcoholism is genetic, you know, runs in your family, and there really wasn't much I could do about it or do to prevent it. It just is what it is. And I've switched my tune on that. I do feel that we reach out to these external substances, and alcohol is one of thousands, to make ourselves feel better internally. For traumas in childhood or just living life in the 21st century can be very challenging for so many. And without the alcohol, I've heard this quote, if you want to find out why you drink so much, well, quit drinking, you're going to find out real quick. It's these improper or incorrect narratives that I was creating in my life, loneliness, rejection, things like that, all from childhood. And I don't want to beat myself up. I found alcohol, and we hear the word self-medicating, and that's exactly what it is. In fact, I think we'd have a major problem on our hands if we could wave a magic wand and just remove all drugs and alcohol or whatnot across the globe. I mean, we'd have a major threat to personal safety across the planet. A lot of these people are self-medicating with this, and that's okay. I found a way to survive, to get through. Until that way, alcohol kind of backfired on me and created so much anxiety that I really couldn't live with myself. And I had a suicide attempt in 2014, and it was intolerable, and I couldn't go on living that way. And I feel the purpose of an addiction is to really flex us to a moment where we have exhausted all thinking mind options, right? And these are like ways of moderating. I'm sure you've heard hundreds, and some of them are somewhat comical. We have to exhaust those before we fully, you hear the word surrender and accept, but it's like there's a gap in the thinking that we don't have until we finally say, okay, I give up. None of my ideas are working. Insert gap, which is space in the mind, which I've never felt before. And I recall the first day I quit, or 6 days before I quit drinking, I had an intense moment of this. And I heard the birds the next day for the first time since I was a child. It's like, whoa, this is really neat. I still want to drink, that life has not been solved yet. But there was a new dimension that entered my life, and that was space. And at year three or four, a spirituality dimension entered, which I didn't seek. I didn't go after. It just kind of showed up. I think an addiction does serve a purpose. This is called, evolution, right? This is called endowment theory in biology, where everything serves a purpose. There's nothing that happens that doesn't fit with the totality of the universe or to help people grow. Mm. And so I've really rephrased my narrative around the addiction, the drinking problem, as something that was bad, that malfunctioned, and, oh, there's something wrong with me, to, oh, okay, this is just my body screaming or getting louder and louder, eventually to a scream of saying, hey, we need help in these areas. And I feel addictions represent part of our personalities that are out of balance and need some care and attention.
Yeah, absolutely. And what helped you in the early weeks and months? What kind of support did you get, if any, and what did you find was most beneficial?
For sure. And the rubber didn't hit the road until I started to burn the ships. That's kind of how we phrase it, and I like to call it. And what I mean by that is having honest, authentic, vulnerable conversations of what's really going on. I expected my therapists, my family, to all be able to read my mind about my drinking. They can't. And so I remember of May of 2014, 3 months before I quit drinking, I told my parents and my brother, I was like, hey guys, this is a real deal. I'm going to need your help. This is how much I'm drinking. This is how much I drank this weekend when you thought I wasn't drinking, things like that. I remember at the end of that summer, I told my fantasy football league over here on this side of the pond. Those are real popular. Another way of camaraderie with your guys. And I thought all my friends were going to leave me. The opposite happened. I was actually moved closer with connection with them. So the more authentic communication I had with people close to me in my life, and this is burning the ships, these are having one way conversations that you can't unhave these conversations. Inevitably, that creates accountability. And with that accountability, it always opens the door to community. So with the accountability, you're more vulnerable, you build those connections, and then the community component shows up. I started burning the ships, having those intense conversations, and then I did quit drinking on September 7. And then you got to do a bunch of shit you don't want to do. whether that's, hey, I'm going to go to sleep at a different hour. I'm going to start eating better food. Maybe I'm going to go to 12-step meetings. Maybe I'm going to do what I don't want to do, but I know my thinking has created a lot of this mess. So I'm going to do what other people say. And so I did go to AA, joined other groups. I just said yes to a whole lot of stuff that I did not want to do. But the most important part was I had those conversations. The people were up to speed on what was going out, and then they reached out to me. I reached out to them. And there's a lot of science behind this, or just a lot of movement behind community. Mm-hmm. And I just read a book on, I'm reading what, I forget the name, but it's about healing with the native cultures and in Native Americans in America. And it was all community-based. In fact, if one person was out of balance, they use the whole community would come to help that one person. Wow. In fact, the whole community has to shoulder the cost, because they do that anyways. If somebody's sick in our community across the globe, we all have to take on the brunt of that energy, right? If there's a community of people that are hurting in our world, we all feel it. And these native cultures understood that we're all connected, the interdependence of the universe and how we're all connected. If somebody's struggling, if somebody has depression, that's not something we can just let go and not touch it, because it affects everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. How did your, what improved for you, and how quickly? You know, you mentioned that your anxiety levels, you'd even had, suicide attempts, this is rock bottom stuff, right? So, it doesn't mend, in inverted commas, overnight, does it? But, I wonder, when can you remember when you started to get a sense of, oh, wow, actually, I'm feeling more balanced?
For sure. And I can easily break this down into three time frames. So the destruction, the degradation of the body, the mind, the soul, and the spirit happens in this order, I feel. So spiritually, mentally, and physically. And then the healing component happens in reverse order. So you heal physically, mentally, and spiritually. And the first year was physically. When you remove a toxin such as alcohol, and alcohol is the most dangerous drug in the world. That's not opinion. That's a fact. There's plenty of numbers out there to back that up. You're going to physically feel better when you're not ingesting a flammable, right? Alcohol kills. You just drink enough of it in one sitting, you'll find out. Please don't test that.
Absolutely.
So physically I felt better. I thought I wasn't a good runner, but now I can run. I lost weight. And real quick, the weight loss thing, if you're wanting to quit drinking and you do and expect to lose weight, but your body does the opposite, it puts on 20 pounds, trust the body. You're most likely getting your caloric intake from alcohol, right? Mm. Depriving yourself of nutrition and things. So I don't like when people quit drinking to lose weight. I don't, but that's okay too. If that's your entry point, that's fine. So yeah, physically I started feeling a lot better. Couple that with eating properly. I read a book called The All Day Energy Diet. It was fantastic. And that was about first year and a half. Your sleep gets better, all of that stuff. Oh, I can breathe through my nose now. I can start addressing the breathing. And years two and three were the mental component. Anxiety was like 90% better, but still there was some residual anxiety there. And so that was me sitting toe to toe with anxiety, depression, and not turning to alcohol, right? It's like, oh shit, this sucks, but I'm not going to drink. So now what? Insert nature, insert yoga, running, talk therapy, all kinds of stuff, community with other people. Now year three, as I mentioned earlier, a spiritual dimension had shown up. And I feel this is the true motive behind all addictions. It's for us to search, because if we ride the addiction out long enough, two things are going to happen. Number one, we're going to die. Or number two, we're going to say, I can't live like this anymore. I just can't go on. Right. Really all addictions lead to the same route, wholeness. One way is incredibly painful. You ride it to the bitter end and you die from it. The second way is also painful, but it's a hell of a lot more rewarding. And that's when you say, I can't go on living like this, enter a new dimension, a new way of life. You depart from the thinking mind. And that's the most important thing that happened year three for me, is I recognized that I wasn't the voice inside the head. We quit drinking to eventually start work with the thinking. It's the thinking and it's the thoughts that we're fully identified with that get us into really rough situations. And so recognizing that I wasn't the thinking mind, and that's when the split happens. I mean, I had that moment even in recovery. It was like, oh my God, like what is going on here? And then it flips, who is the I? Like, I can't do this. I'm not drinking, but something's going on. Who is the I? Wait a second, I'm not the I. It's a really beautiful process that what happens if you go down the recovery path long enough. I feel that eventually you have to address the thinking. It's the thinking that leads to the thoughts. Mm. And it's the thoughts that lead to the same actions that lead to the same result. It's like this cycle that we still go over, we still relive over and over, but there's no alcohol. The thing is, when there's alcohol in your life, it is impossible to see the cycle. You have no awareness. Absolutely. There's no separation.
Yeah, I totally believe that. You put that really well, actually. And I love that, the way you kind of break down the years, because, I've spoken about this on the podcast a lot. The fact that, when I was in my first year, I was sort of thinking, oh, I wonder if, when I get to the end of this year, that's kind of it. There's nothing to look forward to. Everything's going to go kind of flat. But, you're absolutely right, because years two and three bring new things, new sort of delights almost. And I love the fact that you know, this is such a naff phrase, that gift that keeps on giving. I hate the goddamn phrase. In fact, I've got a challenge out there for anyone who can think of a better one that means the same thing. But it is true, you know, year on year on year, there's something else that sobriety brings, some other gift, some other, you know, experience. And that's what I think is just absolutely amazing. And are you 6 years now, just over 5 years?
Almost seven.
Almost yeah. seven. Oh, wow. Okay. Your bio needs to be updated. So 7 years. Brilliant. And you know, you hear of celebs, don't we, who are kind of, you know, still talking about being 34 years sober. And, you know, I wonder why it is such, I guess I know why, but is that something that occurs to you, that every year brings something else, brings another reason to stay sober, if you like?
Yeah, I like how you phrased that earlier. You know, after you do a year and what's next? And now I'm like, pump the brakes. It's almost too much. Too much is coming at me sometimes. There is no top of the mountain. And I think that's by design.
Yeah.
But there's this inner work that needs to be done. And I think it flips. When we first quit drinking, everything's external, and that makes sense. I'm going to stop drinking alcohol external. I'm going to start talking with other people. A lot of it's external work.
Yeah.
Number one, I think it's because going internal when we first quit drinking is a little too much, a little too painful.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. But with that, you know, eventually you know, the meditation thing starts to show up more and more. It's sitting toe to toe with those thoughts and being with those uncomfortable emotions up until the brink of, okay, I need a drink. And it's the beautiful part about this, where the journey has taken me. It's incredible. And there's, you know, we often put ourselves in the back of the societal queue, people that struggle with an addiction, but we can do something as a group that society can't do. And you just turn on the news, doesn't matter which country you're in, and there's such a divide on the world these days, mm-hmm. on the micro, like individual countries, and the macro overall. But what we can do, and I've seen this over and over, that other people can't do, is we can come together in a room and put all of our differences aside and work together towards one common goal. I've been in the rooms of AA in our own communities. We've weathered elections. We've weathered all kinds of turmoils, a pandemic, and we don't even care about that stuff. We don't care about who's right and wrong and red and green or blue and colors and this and that. We have one goal, and that's living life without an external substance called alcohol. Mm-hmm. And so with that process, we learn vital skill sets that people who don't struggle with alcohol, they don't learn those skill sets of how to work with other people to put aside differences. Maybe the egoic structures are too strong, right? We get a level 10 lesson of surrender and acceptance. And there's a phrase that says you can either be right or you can be at peace. And that's what you're butting up against time and time and time again with an addiction.
Yeah.
Because internally it's just like, there's resentment, you know, there's somebody that pisses you off, the wife, kid, whatever. And in your mind, you're right. Oh my God, how could they have done this and done that? Oh my God. And you're going to keep drinking over that. And so you can be right. That's okay. You can be right. Or you can have peace and you can just let it all go. And I'm not, you know, Zen Master Pablo here on the podcast, right? Like it's a work. It takes, it's a conscious choice. And I'm going to say that again, it's a conscious choice.
Yeah. I did a little, I forget when I was talking about it, but I'd read one of Susan Jeffers' books many years ago. And in one of her books, she says, don't be right, be kind. I love that. You know, quit with the being right, just be kind, right? Tell me a bit about your book. It says it all in the title, really, doesn't it? But tell me some more.
Sure. Alcohol is shit. You know, the book debunks a lot of those rumors and myths that alcohol is healthy for us. Mm. We've even heard the red wine thing.
It's not the red wine. It's exactly. It's the
polyphenols. Yeah, it's the polyphenols and the grape skins and the tannins. That's it. Alcohol is flammable, and if you drink too much of it, you're going to die. You're not relaxing. There's part of your faculties and your brain and body that are slowing down. You drink more of them, they're going to slow down enough that they're going to stop functioning. There's nothing therapeutic about alcohol. Alcohol kills more people every day than every other drug combined. It's just remarkable.
Yeah.
And I will be clear, the title is a little bit of a bait and switch. where I actually love alcohol. I'm so thankful for the lessons it has taught me. I almost lost my soul with alcohol, and therefore I had to go back and retrieve it, find out how to love myself again. So I wouldn't be the person I am today. And right now, I travel the world. I was just in Costa Rica last year looking at hotels and excursions and beaches for our upcoming sober travel trip. I've got a really cool life. Yeah. And I wouldn't be here today without alcohol.
Do you take groups of people on, you know, when we can travel on kind of sober trips then?
I do. We've done two of them. We had to postpone two more, COVID. We went to Peru in 2018, Thailand and Cambodia.
Wow.
2020. We've got India, or like Costa Rica, early 2022, and we're India, late 2022. That's the plan. That's part of what we do, and it's remarkable. You get say 30 people who have one common goal in mind. Like I said, it doesn't matter. We have all different ages, male, female, different countries, different backgrounds. And with that one common goal, we put everything else aside. And after 24 hours of these trips, it's like we're on day seven of a normal trip day seven of a normal summer camp. I mean, the relationships, the connections they build so fast, they're so intense. You couple the sightseeing in a foreign place where we haven't quite developed the identities or judgments. All the smells are new, all the sights are new, all the people are new, right? So those images or judgments, they aren't there. So you do that. You couple it with people that have the same goal, and they're magical. They really are. They're a lot of fun.
Because, you know, for a lot of people, actually going on holiday can be a real stress, because holidays are so linked to drinking for so many people. And, you know, sort of that the idea of being able to travel and go on holiday without drinking can feel terrifying for some people. So, yeah, what a wonderful idea. Tell us a bit about your podcast then, the Recovery Elevator podcast.
Sure. Yeah. I started it in first episode was February 2015. And I was 2 months away from alcohol. So late October, early November of 2014. And I was going to go to an AA meeting, and I was hiding behind a pine tree because I didn't want anybody to see me. Thank you. The stigma. And the stigma's fake, by the way. It doesn't really exist. It's all internal. I said the three most dangerous words that I feel somebody can say on this journey. I said, I got this. I'm too busy. Pulled out my phone, looked at the time. Oh, I'm too busy. I've been sober for 2 months. I've got this. I'm cured. And I just stopped in my tracks. There was this voice. There was this silence. There was this clear communication that said, Paul, you don't got shit. If you don't go to this meeting and don't do something totally different, like, you're effed. And the idea of a podcast showed up. I love podcasts. It's like, oh, okay, well, let's do this. So I went to that meeting. I met with a friend. Went on like a 4,000-mile road trip in America. We don't do walkabouts. We do driveabouts over here. And I mapped the whole thing out in my mind. And in February, I launched the podcast. For the first 3 months, I had trouble sleeping. I was like, what in the hell did I just do? At that time, there was like four or five, maybe six recovery podcasts. Mm-hmm. And there's still room. It's not like it's saturated now. There's still room for plenty more. And I hope there's more. But it was scary for sure. And Janie, you know a little bit about this too, of uploading your story, and it's just, you're putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I have had some criticism, but overall it's been incredibly beneficial. But at the start I said, look, you know, there were pros and cons sheets for sure, Janie, and I'm early sobriety. I recognize this could be a tremendous risk, but I said, look, if I create accountability and if I stay sober and nobody listens, but I stay sober, who gives a shit? That's awesome. Total win. But if a couple people listen along the way, and it helps them, then even better. And here we are. We're at episode like 330 that comes out weekly. Yeah, it's doing all right. I took the last year off. I took the last 52 episodes off, but I just got behind the mic again. Mm-hmm. And it's really neat of where this is going. Asking for help. That's a big one. Ari, the podcast Recovery Elevator, has been the best teacher I could have ever asked for. It's forced me to get outside my comfort zone in so many different ways. And I can imagine it's the same for you with your podcast.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been in radio for years, but yet I hadn't done a podcast, because it just felt too, I don't know, I didn't know anything about it and how to go about it. I didn't know if anyone would listen. You know, it's very different being hired as a radio presenter. You know, we've got 9 million listeners on radio too, but that's not my problem, right? So, but when all of a sudden, if I'm doing a podcast, it's just little old me. And so, I was the same, really. But again, the same as you, it's a case of, well, you know, I'm going to do this anyway. And if you get some listeners, great. And if you don't, well, that's all right. You know, we'll see what happens. But actually, for me, podcasts were what absolutely kept me sober, because I didn't even tell anyone that I'd ditched the booze. I felt such shame. I didn't tell anyone. But it was literally through getting inspired through podcasts that made the difference. So yeah, I do think they're massively important. So tell us about the community and the work that you're doing now.
Sure. And so really not much of this was planned. Started a podcast to stay sober. That was it. But eventually the listeners and the community members told me where to go next. And you know, I had a listener say, hey, let's do a community. Mm. Did a community. Then we went from a free to paid group. You know, that was a challenge. For some reason, people feel that you shouldn't charge in this space and AA is free. Well, I just went to an AA meeting this morning, Janie, and I put $2 in the basket. So someone goes to AA and it's free, you're a cheapskate. even that's not free, and I'm happy to pay for it. But I started the group 2016, and now we have four groups. We cap them at 350. And the reason why is it's called the law of 150. And neurologically, the human brain is only able to develop intense connections with 150 people. Now we're at 350, which is double that plus a little bit, but half of our members don't post. Right. So that still brings us back down to like the law of 150. Now, Hutterite and Amish colonies, they also split at 150. So I kind of accidentally just reached this solid conclusion. Once we got over that, people would cancel because intimacy is lost. And so, yeah, it's $24 a month. And we've got over 70 chats, you know, webinars a month, different titles. We have for parents, for singles, for men, for women, all kinds of different themed chats. You pair people with accountability partners. A lot of great dialogue happening on the Facebook group.
Yeah, I think it really is everything, isn't it? That connection with other people. And I think, you know, over this last kind of year and a half, you know, with everything that's been going on, that's been, I think, just the most difficult thing is that when people have been feeling, you know, alone, it's crippling, that loneliness. I had a guest on the podcast a couple of weeks ago on navigating loneliness, and what was really interesting having this conversation with her was that, you know, she was saying that you don't have to be alone to feel lonely. It's just that you're not having the connections with the people that have had shared experiences, and that's the critical piece, isn't it? You know, we might have a family around us, we might have a bunch of good friends, but they haven't been through the same stuff, you know.
That's a good point. Yeah, great way to say that. You know, the loneliness, isolation, especially from COVID, we're going to be dealing with that for a while. Once this pandemic subsides, which I think we're on the tail end of it, the pandemic that was already here, which is mental health, addiction, anxiety, depression, has really come to the forefront.
Yeah, it certainly has in the UK. And I'm guessing it has over there too. Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
Equally, yeah.
Well, we could talk forever, but just give us your website then, Paul, where people can find out more info.
Yeah, Janie. So it's recoveryelevator.com. We do courses. We've got one in July, starting July 1st, and Instagram @recoveryelevator. Those are two big ones.
Brilliant. Yeah. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Great to chat to you.
Yeah, you too, Janie. I checked out your website and you got a great project going on. Keep up the good work. Thanks
for
having
me. Thank you. Thanks, Paul. Make sure you check out the soberclub.com if you're interested in a really tiny, small, supportive group, but with masses of content. You know where we are, thesoberclub.com. Don't forget to vote for me in the British Podcast Awards. Listener's Choice, would appreciate that so much. You know where to find me, by the way, if anyone wants to reach out, you know, always reach out if you're struggling. I know I say this pretty much every week, but I still get, you know, messages sometimes from people who say, well, you know, you said reach out, so I'm doing it because I haven't actually got anyone to tell how I'm feeling. And I really do think that is the key, because when you're in this funk, you do feel like you're the only one who feels that way. You really do feel that nobody else has ever gone through any of the things that you're going through, and you feel as though there's no way out. So, you know, just by being challenged to actually just share what's going on with somebody else, it can really make a massive difference. So absolutely always reach out if you need support. As you've heard from today's podcast, you know, there's loads of different groups and opportunities available to connect with other people and to get the support you need. You find what jives with you, really. And so don't keep it all to yourself. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook and everywhere else, and it's at Janie Lee Grace, and I'm easy to find there. And do keep me informed as to what, you know, if you enjoy the podcast, please let me know, and you know, let me know your favorite episodes. I'd love to know what resonates, and if you've got any suggestions for guests for the future, I would absolutely love to hear that as well. See you next time. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.